Hi, this is Tom from the Happiness Quotient. Thank you for dropping by. You are one of my favorite listeners because if you're listening to this episode, you're hearing it before we changed our name to the Happiness Quotient. Just so you won't be surprised when you listen, you'll hear me talk about Baker Street with Tom Pollard. Believe me, you are in the right place. We've changed our name, but the excellence of the podcast just keeps getting better. Before we get to the episode, if you haven't done so already, please subscribe wherever you're listening, and I hope you'll visit my Patreon page for exclusive content at patreon.com/thehappinessquotient, and take a look at my YouTube page of the same name, where there are many Everest and music-related episodes, adventure-related podcast elements that can't be found here on the podcast itself. Thanks for being here. If you like what you hear, be sure to leave me a review, a rating, and share it with someone you care about. Now, on with the show. Welcome to Baker Street with Tom Pollard. Thank you for being here. And to my regular listeners, thank you for your patience in awaiting my episode number 9. It has been quite some time since episode 8 was released, and due to many, many unforeseen difficulties, some of them bad weather, some of them some physical illnesses, and some related just to distance and poor website reception, I was unable to get any podcasts out. And, you know, it was kind of good to take a little break as I toiled away on the biggest mountain in the world, which I call Choma Lungma, adopted from the Tibetans' word for Mother Goddess of Mountains, Choma Lungma. It was a beautiful expedition, and I got to meet many fine people along the way. And that brings me to the guest that we will discuss many life experiences with today, a gentleman by the name of Yuva Raj Rama, a Singaporean gentleman who became a fighter pilot in the Singapore Air Force and then went on, instead of retiring like he could have, he went on to do work, to give back, to run welfare homes, and now is in Kathmandu, Nepal, where I conducted this interview about a week ago and discussed with him his desire to give back, why it is something that he feels like he wants to do, and what it is that he's done. And he is a fighter pilot through and through, but one of the nicest guys I've ever met. So as we get ready to interview Yuva and me to introduce him to you, we first heard the sounds of a puja being performed in base camp in Tibet by a Sherpa who was a lama, trained as a lama, and he was performing a puja ceremony one evening in base camp to help ensure the success of climbing expedition members who were up on Mount Everest, and pretty cool sounds. And then I melded into it the sounds of Metu VKTRD and Andro M, a band that I have played before on Baker Street with Tom Pollard. The song is Improvisation 1 off of their Improvisations Volume 2 release from Radio Bunker. These guys are from Slovakia. I love them. They're awesome. Great groove music that I really enjoy seeing and hearing. And hopefully we can find more out from these guys in the coming months or years. And if you want to find out more about them, you can look them up on the Free Music Archive, which is where I got this cut. But without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to a remarkable young man named Yuva Raj Rama. All right, to my guests, I want to introduce a new friend of mine who I suspect will be a lifelong friend, a great gentleman who makes an impression on you from his kindness, and his demeanor is so lovely and friendly, but when you dig a little bit deeper and learn about his past, this gentleman has a past that shows a much more fierce and strong and persistent champion attitude that I just had to introduce him to my Baker Street with Tom Pollard podcast. His name is Yuva Raj Rama. And he is from Singapore and now lives in Kathmandu. Welcome. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you, Tom, for having me on. And thank you for your kind words.
I know. I'm not just trying to butter you up. It's true. There's something about you that is very gentle and kind, and the smile. And I will also say, just before we get and talk to Yuva about his background and what he's doing now, he's one person who actually takes time to dress nicely in Kathmandu. So there are people pretty much grub out in this city. It's a warm, humid, subtropical place. So tell me a little bit about your background. You're from Singapore.
That's right.
And you are in your late 30s. We're just going to leave it at that. You're a lot younger than me. But I like to think that I'm, we're peers.
Yeah, we're peers. Yeah.
Tell me about your life. So you're from Singapore. What are your beginnings? How did this all happen?
All right. I was born in Singapore. And I think at the age of 17 and 18, I went into military service as per compulsory military service. Then on, I went on to officer cadet school, got selected to become an officer, and subsequently I signed up to become a pilot.
Wow.
Yeah. It's been a lifelong ambition for me to become a pilot. And when I got that job as a Singapore Air Force pilot, it was a dream come true.
Okay, so you, first thing you said was compulsory. So does that mean everybody serves in the military in the Republic of Singapore?
That's right. From the age of 18 for 2.5 years.
And so for you, you probably, I think what it seems to have done for you is it started to get some gears turning, and you started thinking, well, since I have to spend 2.5 years, I might as well do something really cool that I love to do.
Kind of. For me, my focus, because we have these first 3 months of basic military training, and the top 10% of this cohort gets selected for officer cadet school, and I wanted to be part of this top 10%. That was my first motivation.
Yeah.
If you do it, you do it best. I don't do it at all.
Yeah.
So I went in, I was the top 10%, and we went on to officer cadet school, and that's when I thought, hey, let's sign up to be a pilot, because a pilot is a top 5% or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just put in the benchmarks for myself to test myself, to improve myself, to see whether I can attain those benchmarks. And yeah, I guess it's something which my dad taught me when I was young. Set goals for yourself, achieve those goals. Yeah, and when you give a word, always keep your word. 100%, your word is gold.
Mm.
Yeah, I abide by these principles. Yeah. Mm. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey, about 15, 18 years of flying with the Air Force.
Okay, well, so you became a pilot, which is cool, but what the people listening don't know is you became a pilot of one of the most incredible fighter jets that has ever been made on this planet, the F-16.
That's right.
So you're not just some guy flying a Piper Cub, which is cool, but we're talking about a lean, mean fighting machine.
That's right.
So to fly an F-16, that's you're right. already part of the top 10%. Mm. And then you said some of the 5% of that it can, you know, get into that training.
The fighter pilot school.
What small percentage of guys get to fly an F-16?
I mean, the last stats was about 80 of us went into the flying school, and about 9 of us or 10 of us get selected for fighter school. Yeah, because there's a lot of trainings. We have to go through 2 years of training before we get our wings and stuff like that. And it assess everything about you. Yeah, your physiology, psychology, everything. Everything goes on. Yeah, but it's wow, one hell of a ride.
Yeah. So, in all honesty, you, as you said, they really drill you. I have a friend who's no longer living, but he was a friend of mine in college, and he became a pilot, and it was his dream to fly F-16s. And he, believe it or not, he was a pilot, one of the co-pilots during 9/11 in an American Airlines plane that was flown into one of the World Trade Centers.
Okay.
And to me, he represented everything that would be an F-16 pilot.
Yeah.
He was, coincidentally, one of the nicest guys I've ever known.
Nice.
But he was, when he wanted something, it was bad. And he just went. But it wasn't knocking other people down in the way. He just focus, and he had this laser. He just would look at you, and it would go into you.
Yeah.
It was a huge loss for this guy, but
I salute his bravery.
Yeah,
he is a brave man.
Oh God, he was such a good man. But you talked about like the mental part. So did you ever feel like giving up, or did you get more resolute?
Every time I come to a point where I don't really recall coming to a point where I want to give up. I mean, whenever the going gets tough, I guess I just get more resolute on wanting to achieve my dreams. I think it makes me more determined to reach my goal. The more obstacles there are, the more I want to reach my goal.
Mm.
I think it's something for me from start. Part of it is also because of my training in psychology as well. I'm also a psychologist, as you know. It helps to recognize mental fatigue, mental stress, burnout, when you're approaching burnout and stuff like that. Both in the civilian sense and when you're flying, when you pull too much G's and stuff, and if you know your body, you learn to recognize the limitations of your body.
Mm.
And that's very key in handling yourself during those high G stressful flights.
Mm. Yeah. So you said that your dad, and I would imagine your mom as well, kind of just, how were you raised? Were you one of many children, or what was your upbringing like?
I was the eldest of 3 children. I've got a brother and a sister. My parents were pretty strict with us. I was usually the naughty one, the too active one. I can never sit still for very long. My dad always says that. There was a period of time when he left me alone at home when I was 3 years old, I think. Then he went out to the shop. Then when he came back, he saw me doing something. And he was like, "What are you doing?" Apparently, what I did was I took out all the... I remember my dad was telling me, I asked him for allowance. I wanted to go and buy some tidbits when I was 3 years old. He said no. So I took all the stuff from inside my home. I laid it out on the veranda outside, and I was selling it to my neighbors. Well, my dad said, "Ah, you have a good future in business."
So your dad wasn't mad; he was impressed.
he was mad when he first came back. I saw all his prized possessions outside. But later he was like laughing it off. I mean, not, we still talk about it once, you know, but he still shares with us. He said, this guy, oh my God. And that was at 3 years old, man.
So
don't even remember it.
So you don't remember what you sold? It wasn't like some, like his grandfather's wedding ring.
It was his collectibles. He was collecting a lot of antiques and stuff, and I was selling those to my neighbors, to my...
So did you have to, I don't know, did he have to go back and rebuy it back from the people?
No, they returned it. They knew my family, so they said, you're just humoring him.
So my
parents were, I mean, they raised us up with good values, about principles, keeping principles. I mean, the thing about keeping a word is very important.
Mm.
Don't promise blindly. So I think twice before I give my word to someone.
Mm.
If I have a doubt of doing something, I'll just say I'll try.
Mm.
But if I know I can do it, then I'll say, yep, no worries.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's kind of like stuck with me all these years. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helped me through my career.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, it's really interesting because the people who pursue the truth of what's inside of them, it takes on all shapes and sizes and colors and variations. And here you are, had you been born in, say, the United States, mm-hmm. or even just outside of Singapore, right? We're talking Malaysia, all these different places where, or even in Kathmandu, who knows what you might have done. But what's really cool is, like, so you figure you become an F-16 pilot. I'm guessing, mm-hmm. I doubt it, but no, I shouldn't guess anything. But did you ever train with any, like, does the United States, so how do you, like, is that how you learn how to fly an F-16, or is it all from within Singapore?
I trained in a few places, France, United States. I spent a couple of years in Arizona, a couple of years in Bordeaux in France.
Yeah,
we have advanced training. We have joint trainings with, so that we can learn from each other,
mm-hmm.
the U.S. Air Force as well as us, the French Air Force, a few other places around the world as well, and Australia as well. We were based in Australia to learn our basic fighter training and stuff like that, and of course Singapore to know the local airspace things and stuff. So yeah, a couple of places. So it was 2 years in total flight training,
and So was there any chance or a time that you thought maybe you'd have to go into action, or like any, like, I don't know, did you ever have to go and fly into like battle, so to speak, or was there no active?
There were kind of conflict scenarios.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even term it as conflict. I would just say normal intercept, normal checking unidentified aircraft scenarios and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And a couple of other missions.
That you can't talk about?
That's right.
Really? Seriously, you can't, like, that's pretty cool. Right. So, like, because it's classified.
That's right.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But I learned a lot from all our allies all across the world.
Mm.
I learned a lot from them as well. The US Air Force, the French Air Force, name it, Australian Air Force, everyone.
Okay, that's really, really awesome. So here you are in Kathmandu, Nepal,
mm-hmm.
and I'm guessing there aren't many F-16s here in Kathmandu.
Only choppers.
A lot of choppers. As a Mount Everest climber on the south side, there's a lot of choppers. Yeah. Like, the helicopters are coming in and out. I'd like to ask, so how did you end up here?
Uh-huh.
And you told me earlier that you've been in Kathmandu for about 10 months.
That's right.
So it sounds like you're entering a new career phase. The F-16 is now a past. You could probably jump in one and fly it, but you're doing something different now. How did you end up here?
All right. That's a pretty long story.
Okay. Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
All right. Well, I was, after 15, 16 years out of flying, I decided to step back and I came out of the Air Force for a while. Then I wanted to give something back to the community. So I was running two welfare homes, one for persons with mental disabilities and one with persons with physical disabilities as well as age-related disabilities, like end-stage care kind of homes. So I was running these two different homes. And one more was for those who are abused children.
Wow.
And children who are orphaned as well. So these homes were in Singapore, and I came out of this Air Force. Then I was thinking, okay, it's time for me to do something back for the community. What shall I do? And yep, I got the chance to run these homes, and I ran them.
Wow.
I ran these homes. I got the shape up. The military training helped me to base the foundation, to base the structure of the homes, and to revive the homes to make it more savvy and make it more sharp. And the focus on the residents, my background in psychology helped me understand how do we deliver the best care possible in the most humane way to those facing end of life stage and those who have faced trauma in their lives as well. So it kind of like, I loved it.
I loved it.
Yep. So I was running that for a couple of years as well. And I was also doing consultancy for management. I was advising some businesses on how do you leadership management. I mean leadership. How do you develop leaders?
Yeah.
What makes a leader? Yeah. What makes a leader tick? What are the qualities, core values of a leader? The core values. You know, the core values define a leader.
Right.
And when these core values have always have to be in a leader, you know.
Mm.
If any one of these are not in balance or out of sync, it's going to spell trouble for the leadership. So I did a couple of talks on those as well. And while I was doing this, I met Jamie McGuinness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually knew his partner from the Singapore Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So then Jamie came over, asked me if I was keen to come over. And there was this company here in Nepal. Can you come over, help see if you can develop this company, put in some of your ideas and thoughts, make it sharp and shape. I said, hey, why not?
Wow.
A chance for me to make a difference is what makes me tick.
Yeah. Incredible.
A chance. Any chance for me to make a difference in anything I do makes me go. Get it? No matter which way. Anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
If there's anything anywhere in the world where I know I can make a difference, I'll go and make a difference. Yeah. I believe in making an impact. Yeah. We are here for a purpose. I don't know what my purpose is, but I'm here to make an impact. That's what I know. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So I came over to Kathmandu about 10 months ago.
Wow.
Thanks to Jamie.
Yeah.
And I started learning the ropes of this company, Expedition Himalaya. It's a fantastic company. Yeah.
Wow.
So got to know the staff. It was... My biggest challenge here was I didn't want to... force down the Singapore level of efficiency into the existing level of the in-country standards, because that's not fair, you see.
Yeah.
Because in-country, they've got their own protocols, their own default system of functioning.
Yeah.
I can't come from somewhere and then force down my system into them. So what I was trying to do this last few months to find a common ground where I can meet them halfway. You know,
yeah.
The Nepal efficiency halfway, Singapore efficiency halfway, where I can merge them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad to say that, I've kind of like done that.
Yeah.
Kind of like done that. So the last few expeditions were pretty good.
Yeah.
We had a couple of rough edges to smooth out. I'm going to be honest about that.
Yeah.
But it's a work in process, but it's so much better than how it was before. Yeah. And the company is developing. We recently got rated by a TripAdvisor as well. We're on track. I've got certain goals for the company which I want them to hit, like Trip Excellence Awards and stuff like that.
Ah.
So I'm putting this in, and then my guys as well, setting them for leadership training, especially my Sherpas. I think in Nepal, the Sherpas need some form of leadership training and PR training. I don't think they actually have it here. So me and Jimmy were thinking about doing professional development training for the Sherpas.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to start one next year.
Fantastic.
Yeah, leadership was there. If this goes well, we probably include other shoppers in as well.
Yeah.
Just to teach them how do you carry yourself. You know, they're very good in technical skills, but what about the PR skills? You know, how do you speak to your guests? How do you speak to your clients? How do you empathize?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the quality.
Yeah.
That's very important up there, high mountains. So this is something we're gonna work on. Yeah.
That's incredible. And I'm going to jump in there. So Jamie McGuinness, who Yuva has spoken about, who asked him to come over to help run Expedition Himalaya. Jamie is a six-time summiter of Mount Everest. He has been on virtually dozens of 8,000-meter peak climbing expeditions. And I've known Jamie for... probably 10 years, but never really known him until recently, where we partook in a in an expedition together in Tibet.
Yeah.
And yeah, so Jamie's partner is Singaporean, right? Yeah. And that, and so, yeah, so Jamie, fortunately, and I sometimes I there are no mistakes in this world. I think it was probably meant to be. And you were looking or running successfully some incredible organizations, but boy, Jamie scored when he crossed paths with you, and the fact that you accepted his offer, it sounds like a big challenge, because running an expedition company, whether it's treks in Ladakh or an expedition to Mount Everest, there's so many moving parts. And there are so many things that can go wrong.
Let's
take, for instance, you think the team is driving back home from China into Kathmandu, and then there's rains, and an entire half of a road washes out. So everybody gets stuck on one side.
And the gear gets stuck. So.
And how do you get 15 tons of equipment across a gap between where two roads should actually be just one?
Yeah.
It's really, really exciting. The thing that resonated with me, obviously there's a dozen things I could ask you about, but you talked about the Sherpa, because the Sherpa are such a vital part of success on anything from a trek to get to the summit of Mount Everest or any other peak. You really nailed it. There's a lot of organizations, or not a lot, but there are organizations that are starting to teach technical abilities. The Khumbu Climbing School, for instance, in Fortse, Nepal, which is just being dedicated, I think, tomorrow or the next day for the first time, and it's an indoor climbing wall. So these Sherpa become proficient at the technical aspect. But as a guy who's been on a number of expeditions, and it's okay, but you nailed it. There are some Sherpa who might have a little shyness about their inability to speak English, or Spanish or French or whatever it might be. But you know, it's easy to say this as an American or someone from North America, but just learning English can connect so many cultures on an expedition. Because I hate to say it, because I'm not a self-centered, like our country is the center of all activity in the world, but if some of these Sherpa just learn how to speak some really basic English, it connects, it builds bridges, and suddenly there's working, people are working together.
Naturally.
Yeah. And I would like to volunteer to at least be a part of that in whatever way I might help.
Thank you.
Because that's a phenomenal idea. And I've never really heard anybody talk about that before.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something which I'm really pushing this company to. I think we really need to do a lot for that, for the ship.
If somebody would be interested in learning more about some of the work that you've done, do you have any, you said you were running homes in Singapore.
That's right.
If somebody wanted to help or participate or be of assistance in some of the things that you've spoken about today, is there a place that I could send them? Would they go to Expedition Himalaya and send you an email? Or
I think probably send me an email.
Okay.
Or probably call me at my local number, I guess. Okay. Or WhatsApp me, Viber me, or whatever. I'm on WhatsApp, Viber, emo, everything.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what I'll do is I'll put in the notes to this podcast a place that they can reach you. I'll probably leave the phone number out, so all of a sudden you're not inundated with fans. I want to meet an F-16 pilot. He's single. You know, all these women who listen, because I've had so many followers who are single women who want to look for an enterprising.
You're too kind. You're kind. You're too kind.
But I want to thank you so much, and I wish you every success in the things that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Tom.
And Yuva, I mean it. If you continue pursuing that idea, I don't even really know how I could help, other than maybe help you bring people to you that might be have financial resources or know some things. I would love to help, because that this is the one of the things I did in one of my podcasts earlier. About 19 years ago, I had an opportunity to interview Sir Edmund Hillary. As many people who listen to this podcast know, he and Tenzing Norgay were the first people to climb Mount Everest successfully in 1953. And the one thing about Ed Hillary is after he summited Mount Everest, he was given world fame. I don't know if he was a brilliantly wealthy man, but fortune. And what he did was he spent the rest of his life giving back to the people of the Khumbu region and to Nepal. It's reforesting. Awesome. He built schools, hospitals.
Ooh, nice.
He gave back. And that was, he never wanted people to say, you're incredible. He was like, no.
Yeah.
Well, oops, I just gave his age. All right, ladies, he's 39. You could have retired.
Yeah.
And you're going to keep on working hard.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have given me the sense of how I'm feeling now. The sense of giving back. The sense of giving back is the greatest sense of satisfaction I feel. Yeah, I always have that. Yeah. Putting a smile on someone's face, be it in a counseling session or being in a one-to-one session, is something that makes my day.
It's incredible.
All the time.
That's incredible. Well, thank you so much for being a part of Baker Street with Tom Pollard. It is an honor to be your friend.
Pleasure is mine. My honor the same as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tom.
What a really cool guy, and I so enjoyed my conversation with him. I knew from the beginning when I met Yuva that he was the kind of person that I'd like to have on Baker Street with Tom Pollard. I don't think that you need to become an F-16 fighter pilot to be appropriate for this podcast, but what really fit the bill is that instead of retiring, which he easily could have done, and still volunteered and things like that, Yuva went on to run two welfare homes. He said at one point there were, in different homes, had 150 residents and 70 different staff, which is pretty incredible. And what he did with his psychology background, he had an aptitude for counseling, whether it was orphaned, abused children, or children whose parents were incarcerated, or people with mental, physical, or medical challenges, and help those people transform their lives. It seems to me, in some respects, that's as an important job as being a pilot who helps defend the security of a country. So he really reached down deep and gave back to his community. It was really my good fortune that I had the opportunity to meet Yuva as the person who helps run a company called Expedition Himalaya. And that was the name that you'd heard earlier. Jamie McGinnis is a guy that I've known for some years. And Jamie McGinnis is a climbing guide and a trekking guide who has tagged Everest on six different occasions. And he was the one who, through his partner, a woman who was also in the Singapore Air Force, met Yuva and asked Yuva to come and take the challenge of trying to run Expedition Himalaya and to help grow it. And I have no doubt in my mind that Yuva's experience, enthusiasm, intelligence, and stick-to-itiveness will have a huge impact. So if you'd like to find him, I will post his email address on the notes to this podcast. He might be worth reaching out to if you have any thoughts or ideas or want to learn more about the programs that he had involved himself in. Anyway, next week I don't know, it's going to be tough to match that one, but each week I'll endeavor to bring on a guest or tell a story that is of interest to you, and hopefully we can continue to grow our fan base and our listener base. Yuva, again, sums up really the idea behind Baker Street with Tom Pollard. I've said this every time. We create our reality with the thoughts that we empower. And Yuva was somebody who really took his thoughts and his dreams and his desires and made them become reality, whether it was trying to hawk his father's collectibles when he was 3 years old to go get sweets at the store downtown, or becoming an F-16 fighter pilot. Yuva, when he had a vision and a desire, he made it come true. I think he can be an inspiration for all of us. I know for sure he is for me. And as a guy who's darn near old enough to be his dad, you know, I still look at people like that and I think there's so much more that I can do with my life, so many things that I can do to improve not only my life, but the atmosphere and the positivity of those who I come into contact with. So as I say, we create our reality with the thoughts we empower. I believe that just in my good fortune, it wasn't a mistake that I met someone like Yuva. And I hope you've enjoyed listening to him as much as I did interviewing him. So thank you very much for listening. Again, you had heard the music of Metu, VKTRD, and Andro M off of their Improvisations Volume 2 release, which can be found on the Free Music Archive. If you're interested in finding out more about me, or in joining the mailing list, or in sharing Baker Street with Tom Pollard with friends or family or people that you come into contact, go to my website, eyesopenproductions.com, and on the top you can see a contact button. Click it and write me a short note and say, hey, I'd like to join your mailing list, so I can give you guys first dibs on the next Baker Street that comes out. Also, I would love it if you shared it on social media and told people. You can put it on Instagram with a link. You can put it on Facebook, Twitter, whatever works for you. And I would be honored to have you share this with others, because as we endeavor to make this a better world to live in, we need to spread our positivity and our thoughts, and those things do impact people's lives, even if we only come into contact with them for such a short time. So let's make this world a better place. Let's make this a place that's more positive and kind, and a place where people can grow and prosper and not worry about whatever shortcomings they might judge themselves to have, or not judge others' shortcomings, because judgment really is at the root of questioning the truth of who we really are. So be kind to yourself, and when you look in the mirror, no judgment. Just be kind, accept where you are, endeavor to be a better person and more kind, and make this a better place to live. Thank you for visiting me on Baker Street with Tom Pollard. I look forward to seeing you and hearing from you as often as you ever want to write me. Thank you so much, and I will be seeing you real soon. If you're still here, thank you for visiting. I hope you'll take a moment to subscribe wherever you're listening, and I hope you'll also visit my Patreon page for exclusive content at patreon.com/thehappinessquotient, and take a look at my YouTube page of the same name, where there are many Everest and music-related episodes, as well as adventure content and interview snippets that can't be found here on the podcast. Thank you for being here. I hope you'll share this, leave me a review, a rating, and come back soon.